Testing, 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 1, 2. This is tape number 2. This is Ann Phillips speaking. I'm here with Jean and Ed Christman. Today is April 23, 2006. To the last statement, Jean, about the faculty wives, just say that when you tell about the Faculty Wives Club. When you presented the book to Dr. Tribble, please. And someone said, do you know what you've done?
Right. The next morning, I was confronted with the question, do you know what you've done, when I presented the book to Dr. Tribble. This was from a faculty wife who did not like Dr. Tribble, who was angry. And I said, well, no. But it didn't bother me. I just, you know, listened, and that was it.
Yeah. Yes, Ed.
And that's a way of saying that whereas mostly Eastern North Carolina good Southern Baptists had voted to move the school, it was people from Eastern North Carolina and elsewhere who had to have an object to throw darts at. And Tribble was what I called the Moses of Wake Forest, because he picked the school up and brought it to Winston-Salem. It was his grit and determination, his power to corral the money, but it was mainly his, it was who he was as a person that meant that it happened. And in that sense, whereas he was not Gregory Peck, in appearance, he might as well have been Moses, because don't care how Moses looked or the fact that he may have had a lisp. This man didn't have a lisp. He had a heart and desire to get the school moved. And with the help of many Eastern North Carolinians, he did. But there were still those for whom the whole thing was scary and frightening and disturbing. They'd lost their school. The town of Wake Forest had lost its primary source of income. And so they would strike out. And that's why people would say to Jean, do you know what you have done? Like she had sinned against God and all humanity. Mm-hmm. And none of that, of course, was the case. But there needs to be, when something of this magnitude happens in way of a change of direction for a family or for a school, there are the naysayers, and they're going to be people who will want to say somebody's responsible. And Harold Tribble, Moses, was the guilty party.
I see. Oh, my goodness. Well, I can certainly see that. And I didn't know I was tiptoeing through the tulips or something, you know, 56. Well, no, I was on campus. But I, you know, those of us way down on the pecking order didn't really know what was going on.
He was the ideal man.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
To do the job.
Yeah.
Because he didn't really care about the unimportant things. He knew the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went to him to say, I have 5 students, Dr. Tribble, who want to live with a church couple in the area where they've been doing all their mission work in the inner city. They want to live together, and this is 1965. And what do you think? Fine was the answer. End of discussion. It was like he'd been waiting for me to come over there and ask him something.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And so when Harvey Cox came down here shortly after that from Harvard to speak, we took him down there, and he was talking about the nature of ministry and missions. And he said, sort of like this house you've got going down here. That had 5 students, 3 women, 2 men, and a couple from Ardmore Church, associate pastor and his wife, who just vacated their own house for a semester so that they could live down there.
Oh, and that on Patterson Avenue.
On Patterson Avenue.
That's pretty.
And it was very near where they did a lot of their mission work, but I assure you it's a house that would not get in the paper for sale or anything, because it was an old house, but it was adequate. And they weren't looking for any frills.
Uh-huh.
You know, it had all the comforts. I mean, it had the necessities, But it was an enormously powerful symbol.
And so they literally lived there.
Oh yeah. So I had to get permission. I mean, no students lived off campus.
Uh-huh.
No co-ed group was living off campus. And so he just said, fine. It's like he'd been waiting for me to come.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, of course, he hadn't. But in any case, he saw the Tribble, like Moses, saw the bigger picture.
Uh-huh.
In the long run, letting these students who are responsible members of the religious community and with a sponsoring couple live down there for a semester, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm.
We aren't taking many risks with that.
Mm.
And they weren't.
That is just... That's amazing. That's just that's a wonderful story. It's a powerful story. Let's take a little longer, just a very few minutes. And who gets to choose something that you want to?
What's on the paper, Jean?
About the coffee house.
The coffee house.
Oh, the coffee house.
Yeah. We started the coffee house in an attic. I'm reading from the notes. Yeah. WFU Library, 1966 to 76.
Yes, something.
Eighth floor. You could walk out onto the roof. I didn't know that.
Once upon a time, the campus ministry offices, except mine, were in the basement on the first floor of the library. That's where they had their office space. And someone had the idea that we ought to provide a respite for those wonderful students who were studying so hard in the library.
Mm-hmm.
And so we found that was when the idea of coffee houses had become somewhat mainstream. We found there was some space up there in the library on the eighth floor that wasn't being used. And so the librarian, and I, you know, there's some things that happen, Ann, that you just, if you said, I have a vision that so-and-so is going to happen, they'd say, you know, you've been eating too much stuff. So, in effect, I would say, I had a vision that I'd go to the director of the libraries and say that we wanted to use some space that they weren't using for a coffee house, and we were going to keep it open 6 nights a week, and we would staff it, and we had a place to keep the milk and all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And wonder what you think about that. Well, of course, just like Tribble on the business of the co-ed living arrangement. Mm-hmm. He said, "Oh yeah, I'd love to have sticky sugar cake, and coffee and tea floating around my library."
Mm-hmm.
We obviously said you can't take it in the library itself,
mm-hmm.
but some people, I'm sure, did. The point is, the mood was right for something like this to be done. And it was an extraordinary place to meet and talk with people.
Mm.
We even had, we'd have entertainment up there sometimes, guitars and the rest.
Mm.
The campus ministers staffed it 6 nights a week.
6 nights a week.
6 nights a week.
Approximately
7:30 to 11 or something like
dear.
That. And we served coffee, Russian tea, mm-hmm. and sugar cake.
Not to be picky, but Moravian sugar cake or just anybody's sugar
Moravian
cake?
Sugar cake,
oh,
ma'am.
Dear. Here, I have a story.
I knew you'd set you up for a winner there. Moravian sugar, which had to be purchased, and then we had to store it when we didn't use it. And that is sticky stuff.
Oh, it's sticky.
It is sticky stuff. We occasionally had some entertainment. There was a small stage
mm-hmm.
with guitar players and the rest. But mainly it's just people came up there. Before they went to study, while they were studying, or when they'd quit studying, and have some refreshments. And
Jean, did you get roped in on that?
I didn't work regularly, but I did go up some.
I'll
tell you one person who did,
mm-hmm.
A Catholic priest who was a campus minister
mm-hmm.
here named Father Begley. He later moved to Charlotte and became a bishop
or something.
Oh. But we heard from him later.
Oh,
I mean,
my.
He was such a sweet person.
Oh yeah, but you had the
David Wright,
the denominational thing,
mm-hmm.
Methodist, Baptist,
mm-hmm.
Episcopalian, Presbyterian, Baptist, all of that. It sort of gelled. I mean,
yes.
First they had offices in the basement. Here we were running this coffee house six
mm-hmm.
nights a week,
mm-hmm.
which depended on them and others. I mean, sometimes there'd be somebody from one of their churches. It It just, the idea caught on.
Oh, my.
You know, simple. But the main person for me was Merrill Berthrom.
Oh.
I mean, what librarian would say to any group, hey, we want to open up a coffee house in your library.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we'll tell them not to take the sugar cake back to their Carol or to their or anywhere else with their sticky fingers.
Mm-hmm.
He just assumed we would orderly keep it as best we could,
mm-hmm.
and we did.
Oh my!
Until the library needed more space.
Yeah, and
when
they did,
10 years.
In 10 years, and when they needed more space, we were out of business. But
oh my goodness!
I think by that time, a lot of us were. We were ready to.
You were ready.
I think so, because it was quite a challenge.
If you all staff that roughly 1966 to 1976, Jean, you've got these notes here, roughly that those years. That's a lot. A whole decade of sugar cake is a lot of sugar cake.
I think that's when it was. But actually, we were gone 1 year.
Right. Well, we think that's it. Let's just say it was for a long.
Yeah. That's, well, we can. I had some kind of record that gave me those dates.
Understand.
But they seemed to have a lot of fun. They it never seemed to be tired of that.
Oh.
So
just can't imagine the devotion. And
no, well, we were
drive.
There was a lot of that, but I think too, as far as the students are concerned, and we would as campus ministers, we pick up on this. Everybody had to go to school, had to do their work. But the pace of life in college was not like it is now, as I see it. The pace now is, if you don't do well in school, in high school, in middle school and high school, you're not going to get into a good college. And if you don't do well in a good college, you're not going to get into a graduate school. And so it's not that these students didn't study. It's not that they didn't go to law school or med school. They did. But the dynamics of it were different. There was a sense in which you did your work and you moved on.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's a real apprehension from many of these students. And I'm not talking about somebody with only a one-celled animal. You know, the students we get are terribly bright.
Yes.
And as when Gina and I talk to them in the BSU, you find out just how intense it is.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because they have grown up in a period in which you really start somewhere along and about in the first grade.
Yeah.
I mean, they're giving multiple choice quizzes to kids in elementary school, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd have never passed any of those, you know? I'm glad I didn't have to take them.
Yeah.
But the generation of the coffee house time, I mean, that period of time was an easier time to do something like this and to get the help that you needed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a blast.
Yeah.
It was a blast.
That's just amazing. Wonderful, wonderful stories. I'm going to draw a line in the sand on this.
Yeah.
And we will pick it up. There is so much. Jean, you've been wonderful to provide the notes. Thank you to you both for the stories. And I am enriched just because I can be here and listen. Thank you.
One or two things that would fit with what you're saying.
Good. Testing, testing. Today is Sunday, April 23, the year is 2006. This is Ann Phillips speaking, interview number two with Ed Christman. We are here in the home of Ed and Jean, and we are all together. And Ed, just say your name. I'll see if we can get this.
My name is Edgar Douglas Christman.
Wonderful. Here, Jean is with us, and she's going to give us some words of testing, one, two. This is tape number two. This is Ann Phillips speaking. I'm here with Jean and Ed Christman. Today is April 23, 2006. To the last statement, Jean, about the faculty wives. Just say that when you tell about the Faculty Wives Club. When you presented the book to Dr. Tribble, please. And someone said, do you know what you've done?
Right. The next morning, I was confronted with the question, do you know what you've done, when I presented the book to Dr. Tribble. This was from a faculty wife who did not like Dr. Tribble, who was angry. And I said, well, no. But it didn't bother me. I just, listened, and that was it.
Yeah. Yes, Ed.
And that's a way of saying that whereas mostly Eastern North Carolina good Southern Baptists had voted to move the school, it was people from Eastern North Carolina and elsewhere who had to have an object to throw darts at. And Tribble was what I called a Moses of Wake Forest, because he picked the school up and brought it to Winston-Salem. It was his, grit and determination, his power to corral the money. But it was mainly his, it was who he was as a person that meant that it happened. And in that sense, whereas he was not Gregory Peck, in appearance, he might as well have been Moses, because don't care how Moses looked or the fact that he may have had a list.
Good. Testing. Today is Sunday, April 23, the year is 2006. This is Ann Phillips speaking, interview number 2 with Ed Christman. We are here in the home of Ed and Jean, and we are all together. And Ed, just say your name. I'll see if we can get this.
My name is Edgar Douglas Christman.
Wonderful. Here, Jean is with us. And she's going to give us some words of transition. Jean, I'm going to give you this microphone. Let you speak, please.
Okay, when Ed was a student at Wake Forest College, 47 to 50, he was active in religious activities, the church, superintendent of the Sunday school, the college Sunday school, first vice president of the BSU Council, and devotional vice president of the state BSU Council. When he graduated cum laude, was a senior class orator, president of the Euclidean Literary Society, member of ODK, Who's Who, debate team, and so forth. He entered law school, was there from 50 to 50.